All right, and welcome to another episode of the Streaking Lawn podcast. Once again, my name is Pierce, and once again, I'm joined by Caroline. How is it going, Caroline?
Hi, it's good. How are you?
I'm doing well, and we have Paul this week again. Paul, how are you?
Hey, doing good. I would like my name to be preceded by a Jamaican air horn for every episode for the rest of the season.
Yeah, boy.
Okay.
Okay. There we go. We're here to talk. How about UVA sports? Does that sound good?
I had a TED talk planned about molecular. Never mind. We'll just talk about
sports. Do you guys eat expired food, like food that's been past the date, like Parmesan cheese? I was thinking about this tonight. Like, the cheese looks fine.
All cheese is just milk that's past its expiration date. At that point, we're just talking like a matter of degrees.
How fancy of Parmesan cheese are you? Are you talking like crap?
No, not fancy. Like the processed shakeable kind.
Yeah. Like crap.
Yeah, plastic doesn't go bad. You're good.
Yeah, I'd probably eat that. But as soon as milk hits the date on the carton, it's out. I'm pouring it out. It's done.
Well, same question about milk then, but I guess you just answered it. I mean, if the milk smells fine and looks fine,
no, it doesn't matter. I have the biggest fear/aversion to curdled things.
Like, no, see, you just have. That means you're just impatient. That if you wait long enough, then you go from having bad milk to having good cottage cheese.
No, I like can't even like cottage cheese.
And sometimes it says sell by, and sometimes it says best by, and sometimes it says used by. I just go with the smell test. All right, we're all on the same page there, except for you and specifically milk. All right, now into UVA
yogurt, to any milk, any dairy product.
Oh, except cheese, which is the dairy product we started with.
You said like a process, a processed craft. I'll give a little. It depends. Like, you know, I'm not talking like 2 months, but you know.
This episode brought to you by the Dairy Council.
Yeah, I mean, Parmesan cheese is still a dairy product. I wasn't talking about like oil-based American slices.
Ew, gross. I also don't mess with meat, though, either.
Like, wait, back it up. You don't eat American cheese, oil-based American cheese products?
Is that like the slices, like the
American cheese slices?
I really wish everyone could see the disgust on Caroline's face as she says, is that the processed slice thing?
No, I don't eat that. I eat Colby Jack and sharp cheddar.
Those are the only cheeses you eat?
That's the list.
Caroline enjoys something named Jack. There's a surprise.
Yeah, that's the long and short list. Right. String cheese is good. And if you
that's the same shit. That's
bite it, you're a murderer. Just you gotta peel it. If you bite it, serial killer.
Let's talk about the Ohio football game. UVA went to Nashville because a hurricane was supposed to come through Charlottesville. It did not, but they had to make a decision. I don't think any of us were against the decision other than the fact that we didn't get to watch the game in person because Brian didn't send the Streaking Lawn jet to pick us up.
Rude.
I know, but the game went pretty well. Obviously, it started really well, and we can all be happy with the W. What were your, you know, takeaways, Caroline, from the game?
Yeah, I think the fast start was awesome, obviously, anytime. I don't think I've ever seen a game in which three of the first four offensive possessions had a one possession touchdown. Like, they only lasted one, you know.
Yeah, usually it's for the play. Other team's touchdown.
Yeah, usually. and that was just really cool to see because it was both sides of the ball. When they started to kind of struggle a bit at the end of the second quarter, and then the third was kind of, they couldn't really get in any rhythm. The second quarter was just kind of weird. I kind of appreciate that they kept the pedal to the metal because I think there have been times under different coaches, under Bronco, whatever you want to say, at various times where Virginia never really knew what to do with the lead, and then sometimes by like dancing around having the lead and not playing how they had been playing up until or how they playing how they got the lead, they therefore get really weird with it and give the ball away, but then they got really weird with it and gave the ball away. So I appreciated that they didn't just like rest on their laurels and like made an attempt to continue scoring. Obviously it didn't go great when there was a fumble and then they scored after like two plays, and then that was the weirdest onside kick I've ever seen. Like, I don't even blame the poor kid because, like, just got pegged in the face. And, like, what are you supposed to – you don't even have a second to react. So, kind of – maybe they weren't expecting that onside kick there. which you could talk about. The special teams struggled at times.
At least not just like that. I mean, he was, you know, he was facing the right way. It just sort of
just right in the face.
Fastball. I laughed. I was like, "What? What are you?" You know,
that's the like, offside kick I've ever seen. I was like, "Can't even be mad at that."
Yeah.
I mean, that's just skillful. So yeah, I think there's a lot of really, really, really good things to take away from it, and I think there's obviously some things to learn from, which are good.
Paul,
yeah, I was very impressed to see Charles Snowden, the go through you rusher, as opposed to just Charles Snowden, the go around you rusher.
Yeah.
The first defensive play that led to the sack and the fumble, was a bull rush by Snowden. That's not something that was in his repertoire last year. Definitely a benefit of him adding, I think, 20, 25 pounds in the off season. Mm-hmm. You know, getting a 6'7" frame up to 225 pounds with speed behind it, all of a sudden that's difficult to deal with. Especially a guy that for his, all of the tape that he put out for his first year being I'm going to hit the afterburners and go around the edge. It's going to really screw up blocking schemes, and individual matchups. If a tackle is going to set for a speed rush and all of a sudden get, you know, smashed right in the chest. So I'm impressed to see not just the physical development in him, but the technique development. Because I think he is potentially the key to this defense for the next 3 years. And seeing him put that tool in his arsenal this early says a lot about how he's approaching the game, in addition to how he's actually playing the game on Saturdays.
You think that's something that can translate to an ACC slate? Not that, you know, most of our ACC opponents are that much better than Ohio, and some are probably not better than Ohio, but, you know, size and athleticism,
sure,
and the rosters being what it is.
Ohio's offensive line was supposed to be one of the strengths of their team this year. Mm-hmm. They had, I think, 3 all-conference selections last year that returned. So it's I get what you're saying, that doing that to a guy who's 6'7", 350, like you right. might hit against a Louisville or a whoever else, it is not going to be as effective as often, just like anything you do against them. But having the tool in your arsenal as something to keep them off balance is still something that's going to make you more successful when you go to your go-to successful move, because you've gotten something that can get them off balance and get them with something they're not expecting. So I like seeing that, and it's promising for the other talent on the roster that came into the program as this is a developmental prospect. They are not a play in their first year. Maybe they've only been playing football for a year or two, like Snowden had. You know, seeing those guys develop both their physicality and their technique, still fairly young, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think we were talking about like specific things we saw in Ohio that jumped out to us as good things. I mean, there's plenty of good things to like, but some things that maybe assuaged some concerns from the first two games. The thing that's really sticks out to me is Bryce Perkins' arm. You know, a lot of those yards are Zacchaeus taking it to the house from a fine enough swing route or whatnot.
Yeah, that helps your numbers when you
right.
can pick up 176 yards after contact.
Pretty sure that was Matt Schaub's whole career. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, but there were some vertical passes for sure as well. You know, hitting butts 8 yards out, not necessarily a vertical game, but down the field. And you got to hit those butts when the going gets tough, third and long.
And we're off topic.
And I'm just trying to see if Caroline will start giggling if I say anymore. Yeah, there we go.
But right. On the vertical passing game, actually one of the most encouraging plays for me was one that didn't hit. The deep pass to Dubois that frankly should have been a long touchdown that was entirely air yards as opposed to a short pass that turned into a broken tackle and yak. That's the kind of throw that we've seen people say that Perkins can make, and he hasn't been asked to make it very much so far.
This one to Kelly in the Richmond game.
It correct.
Was, yeah.
Also, again,
little glimpses.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the point you just made, Pierce, of will you be able to do that against ACC competition? you know, Zacchaeus has done that break a tackle and go for long twice, or, you know, three times in two games now against Richmond and Ohio. Mm-hmm. He didn't do it against Indiana.
He has last year.
The possibility – yeah, no, that's fair. Well, if you count Carolina as ACC competition. But the ability to add that long pass, those will hit at some point. You know, the fact that two of them haven't yet is it looked like they were getting closer from that Kelly to the Dubois one. So as the timing gets better, as they get more comfortable, I'm confident that that'll hit.
Yeah, I think it's hard not to just want to talk about the three-headed monster of Perkins, Ellis, and Zacchaeus, who, again, were just fantastic. And it makes the Indiana game even a little bit more frustrating. Like, there were some drops and stuff that we've talked about last week or whatever. Because that game was so winnable, and I do think that it's not necessarily – I don't know. That one's tougher to swallow now, I think, than it was a week ago for me. But that's okay. That's neither here nor there, and whatever. They'll be fine, I think, without it. But some of the little things that I thought were really important specifically, I thought Hassis had a phenomenal game. He helped spring Ellis on that first big touchdown run with some really, really good downfield blocking. And I think the other guy who actually ran with the entire play was Cross, Devontae Cross, I think, if I have it right. But he's the other guy that, like, gets to the end zone almost the exact same time as Dubois and Ellis does. I like seeing those kind of thing. I've always said it on Twitter, like, I'm a huge fan of the downfield blocking because that's just a whole team buy-in, and it's so important in those situations because we need plays like that. We need players like that that'll do those things. And then I think the other one that was really good, the two that were really good defensively, Bryce Hall, I think, has been outstanding all season, actually, and we can get a little bit more into the secondary when we talk maybe about some things we're a little concerned about, but he's been really, really good. I think he's been targeted like seven times, and the only completion against – he hasn't had any completions against him, and the only one that Thornhill had against him was when he fell in the Indiana monsoon. So that's encouraging. And then Zane Zandier, who started in place of an injured Malcolm Cook, was unbelievable. Like, I'm trying to figure out what I can say without just dropping F-bombs left and right because he was – fantastic. Like, he led the team in tackles and was all over the place and just a complete monster. So I'm excited to see what he does this week.
And no cheating, no looking if you have the box score in front of you. How many yards rushing did Bryce Perkins have against Ohio, Paul?
47.
Caroline?
I think it's like 8.
It is exactly 8. Well done there.
I'm the smartest woman alive. Yeah.
That is surprising. And I, you know, you think back and you go, all those times I saw him run very far, that must have been a different game. He did have a long of 14, so.
Yeah, I think the other thing with that, too, is there's been a lot of consternation and hand-wringing about Robert and I, and especially last season and the game calls and all that sort of stuff. I thought he called an outstanding game against Ohio. I think that there was great mixture of what they were doing. They didn't use it looked more like we knew Bryce could do those runs, and what happened against Indiana looked more like a panicky thing. Like, he held on to it in those types of option plays and just kind of was like, oh, I'm gonna hold on, whereas everything looked much more confident and secure and creative when it came to what they were calling. Obviously it helps when you've got guys running swing routes that shake off a defender and then go 76 yards. Like, and you have a little bit of a cushion to play with. But as much as I got nervous in the second half, the fact remains they didn't get within 10. So, okay, there are a few things here and there they can fix, like not just dropping the ball on the goal line, Eli.
Yeah.
Bless his heart. He probably still has nightmares about that. Will the rest of his life. But, yeah, I think that – by Bryce not running as much, I think that's actually a good thing for us.
I think you saw some adjustments after the Hoos got punched back, you know, when Ohio cut the lead with some pretty efficient passing and, of course, the aforementioned onside kick. The second half defense, I mean, pretty much did their job. 10 points, you know, keeping the lead double digits and letting the Hoos eventually stretch the lead back out. I think we're all, you know, up in arms during the game while we're watching it, seeing Ohio like flip this switch and completing these, not just the touchdown passes, but, you know, really moving the ball effectively. It's obviously a combination of the secondary, but also the lack of pass rush, which is probably the biggest concern coming into the year, you know, D-line, having pressure, things like that, at least on the defensive side. You wonder, teams maybe with a little bit more talent, whether that's the majority of our ACC opponents or less than half or anything like that. Does it speak to an ability that Virginia's going to have to deal with giving up big plays? I mean, I think the thing you hear so much about UVA is the margin for error is so small. And you see that on plays like that. You see that I'm thinking of a specific play where one guy makes the wrong approach, you know, at the second level in a running play and gives up one, you know, Ohio's one big run. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much that can go wrong so easily for this team.
Yeah.
Has any of that, you know, stayed a concern more than it would for anybody playing football, you know, which is a mistake-prone game, Paul?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that the big play tendency is obviously troubling because if you're giving up big plays, then you are letting weird stuff happen. You are creating the opportunity for a team that you are playing better than in almost every sense, mm-hmm. get back in the game. That you beat a team, you know, on 6 out of 10 downs, but the three that you don't win, you give up 40 plus yards, you're still going to give up a whole bunch of points. So the big play stuff is troubling. I think some of it has certainly been due to one-off miscue things, the slip in the rain, or maybe it was a miscommunication issue. And so some of that is coachable, correctable, mm-hmm. and some of it is just, boy, that was weird and probably won't happen again. It's concerning, but it's not unexpected either. It's a young team. The number one thing that young teams do is give up big plays. The number one thing that aggressive teams do is give up big plays. So a young, aggressive team is going to give up big plays. I think it's just sort of baked into the 2018 football season for UVA.
All right. Caroline?
Yeah, that's all true. And, I mean, you look back at exactly to Paul's point, when you look at the last couple seasons where there's – like huge heart-ripping losses to upsets when you look at Notre Dame and you look at Louisville, you know, back-to-back years where that Louisville game, and we'll talk more about this, their makeup this year in a minute, but like they almost got Lamar Jackson on that fourth down right before, and that would have been it. Game would have been over. We're talking like fingertips brushing his legs as he like athletically scampered away. And obviously Lamar Jackson is a special player and is incredible.
That's why he was who he was.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where like those moments when you're a young team to have that kind of stuff, like literally slip through your fingers. Like that's what hurts. I don't know. I completely agree what you said about my secondary concerns have like waffled throughout like every day of every week since the season started, because people have made a great point that it's, you know, they're getting put on an island more often than not. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the catches that these receivers are made, like Poppy White for Ohio, he's a great receiver. He made some really good catches, and that, you know, those kids for Indiana did the same thing.
But pretty much anyone we're going to play, like their top two wideouts are going to be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's no, absolutely. But I'm saying, like, there were some catches made where I was like, what? Like, where there's been really good coverage, and in most situations, like, you literally can't ask for much.
There's nothing you can do.
Work through some absolutely fantastic ball. I mean, the stuff that was beating the guys deep was thrown extremely well.
Yeah, and do I think that every single team every week is going to be able to do that? No, but it feels like that's what's been happening. So, I mean, it's – I still have faith and they're still growing and figuring out stuff. And like I said, Bryce Hall has been phenomenal, and Juan Thornhill I think has been phenomenal. So there's definitely, we haven't even talked about the linebackers, which I think have been really good too. So there's definitely pieces, and I think a lot of that revolves around how quickly the defensive line can step up and continue to improve week to week. And if Dylan Thompson does in fact play this week against Louisville, that's obviously a help depth wise. So it'll be interesting to see.
It was nice to see aggressive Joey Blount do, you know, not that he was doing poorly against Indiana, but he had those flags and things like that. So, and more, you saw the aggression really work for the Hoos this game, both in like, you know, blocking and, you know, not just plain safety. And you want that from him. That's exactly what I think Bronco was saying after being asked about the flags against Indiana, was like, that's just the type of player he is. And, you know, sometimes it's bang, bang, and it goes your way. And sometimes you get flagged for it. Before we get to handing out our three stars for the game, I do want to ask, has this stretch, now that we have these, you know, 2-1 in the first three games, was at the beginning when we were talking previews, that was a good sign. We were all going to be happy with 2-1 because it meant they'd be either Indiana or Ohio probably, which was a good sign for bowl eligibility. Has the results, the way they played out, have they changed your mind about what the potential or what the realistic outcome for this team is going to be? Do they look better than necessarily we thought, Paul?
I think so. And the biggest change to me is the offensive scheme, the design, that I know it's been emphasized that it's not technically different from last year in terms of what the playbook is, but it's which pages of the playbook they're using essentially. Mm-hmm. So you've got some benefit of continuity for the guys that are experienced on that side of the ball. But the combination of power run, you know, essentially out of full house backfield pistol on pretty much any running down, but that combined with the space games that they're playing, there was one of the touchdown passes, I think it was to one of the running backs, that the motion out of the backfield and then a fake screen to the wide receiver coming in from the outside that what looked like setting up for a screen to the wide receiver turned the wide receiver into a blocker while the tight end pulled out wide as a lead blocker for the pass catching running back was, I thought, a fantastic play. It's a, you set it up with the rest of your space game and then use it as the get 'em play once they start reacting to that tunnel screen coming back to the inside. And I thought it was an example of really, really clever ways that Anai is using the space game off of the power run and option game to get the best playmakers in the best position to make a play. I've been encouraged by what I've seen from what the offense is trying to do. It feels more sustainable than Banker 50 yards to Lavroni over the top. Mm-hmm. Which is that's what gives me confidence, is seeing an offense that I feel like can replicate itself down after down, game after game.
Good stuff, Caroline.
Yeah, what he said. No, all of it's extremely accurate, obviously. The other thing, I think that I agree. I think they look better than I was expecting. And I know it's, people say like, oh, but the competition isn't that great, and they lost their only game to a Power 5 team. I was like, all right, it's all true. That's all good. Part of it is also the competition, or like as we learn more about the ACC and like the other teams, I think things have opened up, and I'm actually curious to see how it all will end up shaking out, because I think the like my prediction for a win over Louisville now doesn't seem as like, hey, look at me, I'm snazzy and picking like this win over Louisville, because it looks like, I mean, they're favored, like they're now favored, they're supposed to win. And so it's kind of
go ahead and chalk it up as a loss.
I know, right? Why did you do that, Vegas? I think it's, but like Paul said, it seems that everything, they seem more consistent and it seems more sustainable. There was much more, the creativity, and there were fewer drives that felt like that just seemed doomed from the get-go. one of the things I thought was really fascinating about Jordan Ellis's game, and obviously this whole podcast has forever been team give Jordan the ball, but he lost 1 yard in that entire mm-hmm. game. So he had like 171 yards rushing or something and had like 1 yard that was for a loss. And when you consider gotcha. The number of carries he had, and what he was doing and how much they asked him to do, his ability to just kind of churn through everybody really is so impressive. And I still maintain, I think the fitness of the team seems better than it has in years past.
Steph, why don't we hand out our stars of the game? Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
All right, that's the enthusiasm I'm looking for, Paul. What's
so? I guess 3 stars for 3 letters: Eli, Eli. Look, I understand dropping the sure touchdown. No one was more disappointed than me. No one was more disappointed to not see a fat guy touchdown than me. The sound of my dad yelling at me, "If you've got hands like feet," like there's a whole bunch of stuff coming back there. But the play that set up that, the falling on the sort of surprise fumble right at the beginning of the game, you know, he's got to be the anchor of that defensive line, and he has been for the mm-hmm. most part. He's mm-hmm. made at least one big play in every game, it seems like. I'm gonna officially start the campaign for some Eli's Coming t-shirts with like his face on them. I think that's the next your next apparel piece from streakingthelawn.com. So I appreciate the effort for Eli Handback. I stand in solidarity for Fat Guy Failed Athleticism, and I would like to award him all 3 of my stars.
All right.
So bad for him. Bless his heart. I thought about giving my star to the athletic department. Honestly, I was thinking about this week, and I was like, but I know it's cheesy. I decided I'm going to only give them to student athletes because they're the ones out there in the field. But I will say, this is my little plug, like, I think that the school handle and Vanderbilt and Ohio, all 3 programs involved, I think really did the right thing, and they did it the right way, and it was cool how it all came together. And mm-hmm. Obviously, them winning is a huge piece of, like, yay, that all worked out so well. Mm-hmm. But I just want to shout out that whole thing. And when Carla Williams came on the broadcast, that was really cool too. I thought that was neat. Anyway,
sounds like you gave it to the athletic department.
I didn't know. I'm giving it to Zane because
all right,
it's really hard not to just give it to Jordan and Oz. And people are probably gonna be like, "How do you not give it to Jordan or Oz?" But I think coming in and starting the game, he just balled out and again led the team in tackles. He had 10. I think he had 1.5 for a loss. He was all over the field. I felt like every single play he was a factor, so I think he was just outstanding. So he gets all of my stars because apparently that's right. What we're doing today.
Yeah, all your stars is still just 1 star each of you. But, you know, as the host, I get 3 stars tonight because you got to give it to Perkins, Ellis, and Zacchaeus. I can't believe that I have to use all 3 of my made-up stars for those 3 guys. I mean, Zacchaeus, record-breaking day, 247 yards. Most of that yards after catch, which really just shows his speed, his elusiveness. It was just a flawless game from him coming off of a tough game in the rain against Indiana where he had some, you know, drops that you should catch in the rain even. Jordan Ellis, 171 yards, ridiculous. 3 touchdowns, ridiculous. End of the game, just giving him the ball and letting him run over Ohio players like when they know they're just handing Jordan Ellis the ball to try and, you know, nurse the clock away. But Bryce Perkins answering most questions about his throwing ability. Very efficient, 25 for 30, 379 yards of pass. I mean, it was an absurd offensive performance and not a fluke because we saw them do similar stuff against Richmond and we saw some things against Indiana. I couldn't be more excited for those 3 guys, hopefully staying healthy and hopefully performing similarly in the ACC slate.
Yeah,
so,
all career days. It's
yeah, just like ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
I mean, look at Jordan Ellis. He's already had 2 career highs this season. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just building on, you know, each. That's their, yeah. Good choice, Pierce.
Yeah, thanks. it was hard to go out on that limb. But let's talk Louisville. We got our ACC opener. It's at home. The Hoos are ranked because Louisville has not performed well this season, obviously.
We're favored, I think, is what you meant to say.
Sorry.
Yeah. Like, did
we are ranked number one in this game.
They are ranked as the team more likely to win this by the odds makers. Anyway, Louisville lost on the road to Alabama to start. They beat up on Indiana State and narrowly escaped the Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky, who had the lead for the majority of that game.
Yes, they did.
In Louisville. They're also switching quarterbacks to freshman Malik Cunningham, a guy who has thrown for what exactly 163 yards this year, which Perkins did in like the first quarter against Ohio. So I don't know. Hopefully it bodes well. I'm probably jinxing us. We usually get like beat up on by backup QBs starting, you know, for a new game. So maybe it's a new UVA team that'll put an end to that. What say you, Caroline?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like I said, I'm feeling pretty confident and, well, okay, sorry, that's a bold word. I feel less dumb about picking Virginia beat Louisville. Confident fair, is fair. Still a tough
word. I also picked a W. So
I know.
We're both less dumb.
We're
hopefully.
So smart. Yeah, Cunningham is an extremely athletic player. He's kind of like a, I don't want to say mini Lamar, but he has some of the same, he's not quite as fast, doesn't have quite as strong an arm. I watched a lot of that Western Kentucky game, which was gross.
That is an odd decision to make.
Well, I was fascinated. And there were so many, like, I was working on Saturday. We've got folks that are covering different games, and they were all watching the good games. And I'm like, I'm going to watch this Louisville, Western Kentucky, mostly because Western Kentucky was winning. And mm-hmm. that's kind of something where you're like, that's weird. obviously, I mean, the thought of even playing Alabama is just legitimately terrifying. So, like, I won't try and – I'm not going to be like, they got beat down by Alabama.
But they did get beat down by
Alabama. I mean, like, they got destroyed. But when they played Indiana State, like, yes, they did win 31-7. That game was tied 7-7 heading into the half. Mm-hmm. And then they needed – it was 14-7 going into the fourth. So they scored 17 in the fourth quarter, which is strong, like, you know. But that's kind of like it wasn't as comfortable of a win as I think you look at a 31-7. It was also raining. So maybe, you know, we take that with a grain of salt, like we throw in our, Indiana stuff, but this is a team that has struggled with drops. Their offensive line hasn't given Cunningham a lot of protection. He's the kind of guy, like, I'm curious to see if they're going to try and force him out of the pocket and make plays with his legs or kind of sit back and make him work with his receivers and see what they can do. But I mean, there was one play, Jalen Smith just, you know, it was perfectly thrown and he missed it to the point where the defender was pointing at him laughing as they were still like running down the field.
Yeah, like, I saw that.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
So I don't know. They have their own issues to worry about, and Bennett is clearly super involved in this decision as well. Mm-hmm.
Paul, where are you feeling like?
Yeah, I'm somewhat worried by not just the backup quarterback against UVA phenomenon, but backup mobile quarterback against UVA phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I'm having terrible flashbacks to Peyton Ramsey last year for Indiana. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that it's not going to be an in-game switch, that everybody's going to have seen it coming for, you know, a week just about at this point, and there's tape of how Cunningham plays and everything. I think this year the team played pretty well against Peyton Ramsey when they knew it was coming. So I'm encouraged somewhat
but
by
they
that
made a throw, you know, right. More than anything. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably not the better half of Cunningham's game.
Right.
There is that sort of big question mark for Louisville. There is a lot of talent elsewhere on the team. Mm-hmm. And if Cunningham is the missing piece, if there's just, you know, sometimes it just, for whatever reason, a guy just doesn't click. He can be incredibly talented and have all the right tools, but just, you know, his timing is a split second too fast or split second too slow. And it just doesn't work with the guys he has around him. So if Cunningham changes things up for Louisville, and all of a sudden they find that rhythm, I think there's a chance that Louisville is who we thought they were before the season started. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen so far from Louisville doesn't look great, and I don't put a whole bunch of faith in Petrino to be a real rallying positive influence on his team. Definitely seems more of the, well, this is going bad, so the beatings will stop until we'll continue until morale improves kind of coach. And yanking your starting quarterback at halftime of the second, third game after one of those games was, you know, essentially playing an NFL team. I could see this going one of two very different ways, that Malik Cunningham is the answer to all of the questions, or Malik Cunningham is put in the exact same position to fail that Juwan Pass was in, and Louisville finishes the season 5-7, 4-8.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, that everyone knows there's talent on the roster, and it's hard to predict if just shaking it up, you know, unlocks that key. Like, who are we to predict that it won't? And we're pretty cautious here on the podcast, so I think we all think it's a definite possibility. Are both of you sticking, though, thinking with UVA is going to win?
Yeah. Paul picked a loss.
I did. I think I'll flip that. You've got to sort of discount the stats of any sort of season-long stats. At this point, I was like, yeah, well, they were against Alabama, so, like, of course they look like crap.
Yeah.
But as we said,
ours because of Richmond.
Yeah.
Had to discount theirs.
Right.
They played Alabama.
At the same time, you also kind of looked like crap against Indiana State and Western Kentucky. Right. So, I think there's definitely a fairly broad path to victory for Virginia. It'll be interesting to see how there's a lot of sort of strength, both strength on strength and weakness on weakness, mm-hmm. in this game, in that Virginia's offense is very explosive. They're top 25 in explosiveness on Bill Connelly's advanced stats, and Louisville's defense is top 25 in preventing explosive plays. On the flip side of the ball, Virginia, as we've talked about, gives up big plays,
right,
really, you know, up just about 100th in the country. But Louisville's offense is 100th in the country at racking up big plays. So that's the big question mark of how does that Alabama factor fit in? You're not going to put up big plays on Alabama unless you're Ole Miss, TCU, you know, any SEC team with a mobile quarterback.
Ole Miss was not doing that this past weekend. But, yeah.
Ole Miss had,
they had like one.
Ole Miss had one explosive point.
And I was like, oh,
and then Nick Saban got mad.
Yeah. And he flame sprayed all of Mississippi.
Exactly. That's the question, is like, are both of those things accurate reflectors of how the teams play? Mm. Because if so, then it's a much more interesting game. If one of those is off on either side, if Louisville's defense actually isn't as good at stopping big plays as the numbers say they are right now, then all of a sudden that's the door's wide open for a pretty easy Virginia victory.
All right, Caroline, you lean in super optimistic.
Yeah, I'm staying. I think we did a Q&A with Card Chronicle, and I think I said 28-13 is what I picked my final of. I think one of the big things too that Virginia will have to do to be successful is just play smart. Like, there's going to be, make sure you have your assignments on special teams. So that, like, against Indiana State, Louisville had a big punt return for a touchdown. Like, limit things like that. Limit big return. Sure. Obviously, this is all like, duh, this we should do every week. But in this sense, to set themselves up for a much better chance to win this game, they need to make sure that they're playing those things smart. A lot of the passes, or the stuff when I was watching that Western Kentucky game, they messed up like routes and overthrew balls. Like, it was just like, it was a mess. And obviously that could be fixed if they've had Cunningham in as the number one guy in reps for a whole week now, like, whatever. But it was bad. Like, so yeah. If they can play smart and knock out some of those things and force Cunningham into overthrowing his receivers and knocking them off the routes and that sort of stuff, then I definitely feel like way better about picking that dub. Because that's how I talk now.
All right. So. Well, there you have it. 12:30, sometime in the early afternoon. 12:30. Saturday. Scott Stadium.
Regional Sports Networks.
Bow, 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 bow. Regional Sports Network. Stay tuned to the blog, though, for more picks and more previews of the Who's ACC opener. And we'll be back next week to hopefully talk about another win. And until then, for everyone, go Who's.